Welcome to Houston Sports Talk with your host, Robert Land.
Thanks for checking into the best Houston sports podcast. And joining me for the first time on the show is a Rockets content creator on social media, DeAndre Williams. I know a lot of you guys out there follow him. It's great to have you here, DeAndre. And it's good to do this coming off that Phoenix win, which in my mind was one of the more impressive W's this season.
Yeah, definitely. Always good to have a show with some good vibes. And after a W, definitely one of the better wins. Saw a lot of production from everybody, for the vets and young guys included. So yeah, definitely a great way to start the show.
Jalen had what might be his most complete game of his career. I think 34 efficient points, 9 boards, 4 assists, 2 steals, strong defense, and the Rockets were plus 17 with Jalen on the floor. He'd scored 34 the previous game, but DeAndre was nowhere near as efficient on offense or as tough on defense as he was on Saturday.
Yeah, you could definitely see him specifically came out with a certain edge. I know he works out with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant in the offseason, so I think he took the matchup a little personal the second time. I saw him and Devin Booker were jawing at each other the first game, kind of carried over to the second game. Obviously, we saw the dust up he had with Bradley Beal, but just the passion and energy. And like you mentioned, on the defensive end is what I was really impressed by. We've seen him have these moments scoring the ball efficiently, being able to shoot the 3 ball well. But defensively, you could really tell he took it personal, guarding his matchup one-on-one, on and off the ball, which has always been an issue for him staying engaged off the ball. But yeah, definitely one of the better games of his career, if not the best game of his career all around.
Yeah, definitely. And I want to get into Jabari's development in a second. But first, the news came down that Tari's out for the season. He's having surgery to remove a benign growth on his shin. He'll have a bone graft, have a rod put in, and should be ready to play in 4 months, according to MA. Obviously, disappointing news. But DeAndre, when I heard this, it just made me feel better because it sounds like once this is removed, it's gone. This is not a recurring issue. And I was starting to worry he had a long-term condition.
A bit of bittersweet news, I guess you could say, in that aspect of we were left wondering for so long what was going on with Tari. They were very vague, the team doctors and the team overall, about what exactly was happening. So now that we know exactly what's happening, what the rehab process is going to be like, I believe they said he's getting the procedure done on Monday. So we have a timeline now of what exactly is going to happen. So yeah, I guess that's the good news of it. Obviously, we would have loved to have him with us for the rest of the season, especially trying to make a late play-in push. But yeah, like you said, it's better to finally know what's going on and being able to have a plan set regarding his medicals and his long-term health.
Yeah, I guess a lot of people are going to question the Rockets health staff and, you know, what they're doing there. But, you know, at this point, I just need more information. I don't know about you, DeAndre, but I'm needing some of these Rockets beat writers, the guys that are on the scene that can ask these questions, and everybody here knows the names of who I'm talking about. I need them to start reporting on what's happening behind the scenes. I just can't believe we can't get anything but, like, you know, a random Udoka, you know, just line or two every couple of months or something like that.
It was always been vague surrounding it. And I know that they were trying to keep it very, very touch and go from the Rockets perspective. But like you said, like this is the job of these beat writers and journalists, is to try and get the tough information out and to ask the tough questions, especially to a guy like Ime, who you could tell he was keeping his cards close to his vest regarding Tari. And we know how important Tari is to this team. We know how freak this injury had looked for a while, especially with how regular the play had looked from an injury standpoint. But yeah, definitely a little bit of questions for me coming in for some of the beat writers and honestly the Rockets medical staff in general. The wording that came out was pre-existing injury. It's making me think, was it pre-existing pre-draft? Was it pre-existing just from the moment of the injury? So I know they're still being a bit vague with that about exactly how long that benign growth had been there. But I completely agree. I feel like this should have been something they should have been able to kind of pull out of Ime a little bit sooner than we got it.
Yeah, and I just don't even feel like this is Udoka's responsibility. This is where Rafael Stone's got to step in and, you know, be the GM. And he's the guy who oversees the medical staff. And if he can't answer the questions, then have somebody on the medical staff do it. But I just did not understand that. But let's move on to this X thread that you recently did on Jabari's development this year. And that really caught my eye because sometimes I feel like Jabari gets overlooked because he's not quite as sexy as the rest of the Rockets' young core. Can you go through the key points in that thread? What are you seeing from Jabari in his development this year and just overall?
Well, the massive thing that I've seen for him is while it's not perfect, he looks more comfortable putting the ball on the floor. You can definitely tell it was an emphasis in his offseason workouts. His game, especially last year, had been mostly refined to mid-post stuff, sitting in the corner a lot of times, and a lot of just catch, one dribble, pull-up stuff. And that still is the majority of his shot diet now, but you can tell he's getting a lot more comfortable attacking closeouts in general, putting the ball on the floor in transition. There are times when he'll grab the rebound and the guys feel comfortable letting him get the ball and go. And while it isn't perfect per se, it's definitely an area of growth. I think that for a team that runs a very basic offense the way we do now, where a lot of it is high pick and roll, drag screens, delay actions, a lot of mid-post stuff to Şengün. They start throwing a little bit to Jabari at times. That's important to have another guy you believe can attack in multiple different facets. And Ime spoken on it. I spoke about it last press conference about how they want the offense to be able to, you know, multiple guys that can attack from multiple angles. And I think that's just the layer of Jabari's game that he's been able to tap into.
Since he came back from his ankle injury, his shooting's really suffered. It's just 39.4% from the field and 29.4% from three. You wonder, DeAndre, if the ankle still isn't affecting him, because we've seen his percentage go down with this. You know, I thought early in the season, you know, we really saw this incredible jump where I want to say at one point he was closing in on 40% from three, and definitely, you know, great from the field as well, much better.
I think the ankle injury is still affecting him a bit. I'd be very doubtful if he's 100% or even close to it. I will say he's the effort that he's shown despite this nagging ankle injury on the rebound on the glass has been a massive, I guess, development in his game. It's something that's starting to change my outlook on his future long term and just how good of a player he can be. But regarding the shooting, I haven't noticed any major differences with his form. He's always had a bit of a clunky looking form to me for a guy that tall. I broke it down in the thread. He's always been more comfortable going right than he is going left. So I'd have to look at some of the film a little bit more to see what exactly has changed. But definitely has been a bit of a downstretch for him. But he's still a 20-year-old guy, second year in the league. So you expect some of these ups and downs at times. I think the more important thing for me is, despite these shooting struggles, he's still finding a way to impact the game in multiple facets, on the glass, attacking downhill, and defensively especially. The way Ime's utilized him defensively, I think, has been huge for his game, huge for other teams. Wants to run a bit of a heavy switching, one through four type of style. So, yeah, despite the shooting struggles, I still think he's been able to find a way to impact the game. But I do wonder if this is just kind of the shooter he is. Is he going to be a guy that's streaky? Will he ever be able to reach the quote-unquote elite shooter status that he was kind of promised to be coming out of Auburn? So, but again, he's only 20 years old. He's got so much room to grow, so many more reps to take. So I'm not completely out on the shooting, but I am starting to wonder, is he really more of a 35, 36% three-point shooter who has these ups and downs rather than a super elite movement shooter who's going to be 38, 39, 40% long-term?
If you look at his three-point shooting and the Rockets' wins versus losses, you quickly notice his shooting's a barometer for winning. In wins, Jabari shoots 44.7% this year, and losses 28.2%. That shooting gap was pretty similar last year. And DeAndre, his home road shooting splits this year fall right in line with the win-loss splits, which explains a lot about the Rockets' road issues.
That's something that still concerns me a bit. Rookie road struggles, I kind of excuse a bit. It's your first time, 82-game schedule, constantly on the road, trying to develop a bit of a schedule. But this is year two now. You've had that year under your belt. He was playing. He wasn't like a guy like Chet where he was able to sit out and watch. Like, you've been developing these habits, developing a schedule. So that does kind of concern me a bit. It's not just him, in fairness, Jabari. It's most guys in the Rockets, their splits are down on the road. But I am a bit concerned with that. And to highlight what you said about the win-loss split, I think it does show just how important his shooting is to this team, especially for a team that is devoid of it. When arguably your best or second-best shooter doesn't have it that night, you just see how different the offense looks. Teams love basically running five-inch shell defense on us anyway. And when we can't kick it out to Jabari and he can't hit that corner three, can't hit it out of a horn set, you do kind of see how stagnant the offense gets, how much more teams are able to load up on the Şengün, Fred VanVleet pick and roll. So it definitely is a major difference in the team's offense overall when he is hitting shots versus when he isn't. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see these last, I believe we have 22 games left in the season. If he's able to pick it up on the road, I think that'll be a massive swing in either direction for how the Rockets' rest of the season looks. I know that they're still fighting for the play-in. I know Ime's still telling those guys that they can get it. So I'm really looking forward to see just how he responds. I know he's seeing the road stuff. I know the staff is telling him, like, hey, you're this at home, you're this on the road. We got to find a way to adjust. We got to find what we can do in the schedule with shoot around and whatnot. So I'm very interested to see how he goes in terms of the road splits rest of the season.
Yeah, and it came under a lot of people's radar in that Saturday game. Hey, the Rockets played a lot better because they stayed in the same city over a few days and they repeated where they were at. So that tells you this is like a young team issue. I mean, this is what happens with the young guys, and you don't see the variations, I don't think, quite as much with Dylan and Fred and, you know, even Jeff Green. You just don't see that. And I'll just point out that, you know, big guys in the NBA take longer to develop. Paolo, I think a lot of people have noticed, might not be as far along this year after last year. I mean, other guys, you know, it's not always linear. And the nice thing about Jabari is, for the most part, until this little slump with the ankle injury, we've seen him tick up the whole time. You know, the last 20 or 30 games last year, you saw it tick up. You know, as the season was going along this year, it's ticked up. I mean, is there a scenario? Let me ask you this, DeAndre. Is there a scenario for his development where Jabari still has all-star potential? I mean, I don't want to give up on that quite yet.
Yep. I definitely think there's still a scenario for it. I think a lot of it will have to do with him putting the ball on the floor. Like I mentioned that in the thread of just how different his game looks when it is more than two dribbles. I stated earlier, he looks more comfortable doing it, but it is still a bit limited. Just the type of athlete he is, he's a bit stiff, for a lack of a better term. You're not going to see much, like the big draft buzzword is wiggle. You know, he's not going to be a guy that's going to beat you side to side. He's going to have to be a guy that uses his length, uses his strides to try and get past you shoulder to shoulder type of stuff. So if he can get more comfortable putting the ball on the floor, I definitely think that there's a world where he still can be a legit all-star type of player, a legit top 40, top 35 caliber player. And that's super valuable. I think another aspect of that is going to be just how good he can be on the defensive end. It's been a little behind what we've expected or what we've grown to expect from him this season post-ankle injury, which is to be expected. He's coming back from an ankle injury. But he's been a phenomenal ISO defender this year. They've used him a lot more in guarding pick and rolls and being a screen navigator, which is something I never thought he'd be able to do after he was coming out of Auburn, and especially seeing how he was utilized last year. I think the major jump for him, and especially in the long-term outlook of this team and his fit with Alperen Şengün, is as a weak side shot blocker. We see a lot of times when you have a Nikola Jokic, a Domantas Sabonis, a reason why that team's defense can lag behind with those type of guys is because there isn't a backline rim protector to protect them and to make up for some of their faults that they physically can't make up for. The Nuggets were smart when they got Aaron Gordon. As phenomenal of a defender he is, I think his biggest asset is as a weak side shot blocker, being a guy that can come over and clean up a lot of mistakes. I think that they expected Jabari to be that coming out of Auburn. He kind of had that dynamic with Walker Kessler where he was the, I'm going to body him up, I'm going to make sure they can't get an easy bucket at the rim. And Jabari did play a lot of cleanup at times. But to me, he is still more of a wing defender. I never looked at him as a big, quote unquote. I looked at him as a jumbo wing, more in line with a Lauri Markkanen than he would be in line with a Jaren Jackson Jr. per se. But I definitely do think there's a world where he becomes an all-star caliber player still. I think it would be huge for the long-term outlook of the Rockets as well if he's able to reach the potential that a lot of us had set for him pre-draft. I think the sky's the limit for him. I haven't heard anything bad about his work ethic. He seems like a kid that loves the game, loves the grind, and just wants to get better. So I have no doubt in my mind that he'll be able to reach that one day. Like you said, though, bigs do take a little bit longer to develop. So the quote-unquote year three leap, I might not be expecting it next year for him to become an all-star caliber player. But I do think year four, year five, year six, Jabari Smith Jr. is going to be – he's going to be one hell of a player. I'm praying and hoping long-term it'll be in a Rockets uniform.
Yeah, just to go back to what you were talking about at Auburn, I watched nearly every single game, and I was watching them, you know, just not highlights. I was watching the entire games. And what I noticed is that Kessler was more the guy that was having to clean up for Jabari, because that's the kind of player Kessler was. That's sort of what made Kessler like, oh, he could be Gobert, and that's what he's done. He's basically stepped in as the Gobert guy over in Utah. And when I look at Jabari's offensive development, I sort of look at somebody like LaMarcus Aldridge. LaMarcus never had a handle close to what we've seen with Jabari and what he's already developed, but he had the height and that high release and an unblockable type shot. And Aldridge's second year, his numbers similar to Jabari, but he barely shot threes. Jabari's two-point percentage is actually 4% higher, and he's 2 years younger than Aldridge in year two. Remember, Aldridge made 7 All-Star teams, DeAndre, and Jabari's already a much more versatile defender than LaMarcus ever was.
Yeah, I definitely could see that comparison. LaMarcus Aldridge was, I mean, he was such a talented post scorer, especially in that mid-post area. I think Jabari does have a bit of that in his game. I wonder with, like you mentioned, with a three-point shot and how the modern NBA works, probably won't be as much in the mid-post as LaMarcus Aldridge was, but he'll make up for that with the three-point numbers. I do, like I said earlier, I look at more of a guy like a Lauri Markkanen. I think that's like the type of mold and impact he could have on a team. Being more of a jumbo-sized wing, a guy that if you do bring in another big per se, let's say we get lucky in the draft and you get Alex Saar, I think you can move Jabari to the three and you just have a super big lineup. You can still switch 1-3 with him and he'll be able to make up for a lot of the shortcomings Şengün will have on defense, and you allow him to play with another five. You can still play him at the four. And like Lauri, I don't think that either of them can be real small ball fives per se. We've seen it this year where they'll sub Jeff Green into that spot. They'll make Jeff Green play small ball five because Jabari's frame at the moment just isn't physically capable of taking on just the bruisers of the NBA, a lot of the bigger fives. So I see the LaMarcus Aldridge comparison a little bit. I think from a scoring perspective, I definitely could see that. I wonder if in the nature of this offense, he'll get that many touches. I think that's the one thing with how many guys we have on this team. And obviously this team could look drastically different next year. But I do wonder in the quote unquote hierarchy of this offense, just how many touches he can get. I think that's the beauty of his game though. I don't think he needs a million touches a game to make a real impact, especially with how he attacks off of closeouts, him as a spot up shooter, and just in that mid post where it is going to be mostly 1-2 dribble moves, turning around and facing up, like you said, very similar to LaMarcus Aldridge, having a shot that at 6'10, 6'11 with a 7'1 wingspan, unless you're Kevin Durant or a true five, you're not blocking a shot.
You talked about his work ethic. I want to go to a conversation, a little clip that I have with the Ringer's Miron Fader last year, who did a great feature on Jabari while he was at Auburn a couple of years ago. It's worth listening to this brief 2-minute part of that conversation, because if you want to talk about the work ethic and maybe what his potential is, listen to what I asked Mirren what she had to say about that.
You wrote a New York Times bestselling biography about Giannis. And I mentioned that because Jabari's dad said in your feature that he thought Jabari's defensive potential was similar to Giannis's, which is very ironic because Jabari had his breakout defensive game, Mirren, just a couple of weeks ago against Giannis. He held him to 16 points, which is Giannis's lowest point total this season.
Wow. That's fascinating. Isn't that such a, that, okay, I, when he told me that at first, I paused, you know, when somebody compares themselves to any kind of potential with Giannis, I'm like, I don't know, you know, that's very, very, very unique. But if you look at where Giannis was, and we've seen conversations like this when people are talking about Evan Mobley, there was a really nice feature that came out on ESPN recently about like the Giannis model and having Evan study him in the way that Giannis's body has changed. You look at Jabari and like, yeah, his body's going to change, but how quick he is and the anticipatory skills he has on defense. I think he has so much potential in defense, and you saw it in that game that you mentioned. And the other thing is that he wants to be a good defender. Sometimes it comes down to that, right? It's willingness to compete and pride on the defensive end. And I do think that Jabari has those internal qualities inside.
You're the perfect person to ask this question. Do you see similarities between Giannis and Jabari and their work ethic?
I definitely see the similarities in the work ethic, just in this sense of like, you have to kick them out of the gym. Pure love to be there. Childlike enjoyment. You tell Jabari something that he needs to work on, he's going to be in there for like 2 days straight trying to figure it out. And that is so very Giannis. The other thing is this idea that you're never a finished product. You will always work and work and never quite arrive. I think they both have that. And I think they both are big dreamers. You know, Giannis wanted to be great. He didn't want to just be good. He didn't want to just make the league. He wanted to be great. And I think Jabari wants to be great as well. But they're both so soft-spoken, they'll never say things like that out loud. But internally, there is this fire, I hate to be cliche, this fire burning that so wants to be better.
Yeah, DeAndre, I mean, what she said, when I heard her say that, it's what made me so excited about Jabari coming to Houston, because you can see it now. You can see, you know, there's never a night where I question Jabari's effort. There's never a night where I question that guy is not in the gym. We saw what he did this summer with his handle over just one summer. And you talk about, well, he's not good at going left. Well, give him another summer. He'll work on that.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think a massive thing that I noticed during the summer was the talks of him doing yoga. And it seemed very small to a lot of people, but I think he heard some of the talks about him being a little stiff in his upper body, not being able to move as laterally quickly. And I think he took it personal. I think he took an unconventional route to doing that by doing yoga. And I look at that and I think, okay, he gets it. He's listening to his critics. He's listening to his coaches. And he wants to prove them wrong. He wants to prove everyone wrong in the fan base, out the fan base. And I value that. Like you said, you see it on a night-to-night basis. I think Ime's mentioned it before with guys like Şengün, Jalen. Their shots may not start to fall, and it might affect some of the other effort that they put on the floor. I don't ever have that question with Jabari. I know night in and night out that he's going to give his 100%. Kudos to his father. I know his dad had a massive part to do with that. Having an NBA dad is probably such an advantage. I know he's been taught how to be a professional, and I think he takes pride in that. I think he takes pride in, even if my shot's not falling, even if I can't get to the basket, I can make sure you can't either. I can make sure your shot's not falling tonight. And that's important to me. I think that's why Ime loves him so much. I think despite all the talk we heard in the summer, it was never a question of, well, how does Jabari fit? I think everyone saw the fit between him and Ime and said, well, yeah, they're going to love each other. This is going to work. So I definitely think long-term with his work ethic, how bad he wants to be great, the fact that I think he's not too cocky, he's not overconfident in himself, and he's willing to listen to his critics, sky's the limit for him. He's going to be as good as he wants to be.
The other part, and this is another thing that I really love about him, is he loves taking those big shots. He wants those. You know, we saw the shot in summer league that he had, the crazy game winner. We've seen, you know, the shot last year against the Pelicans. And I'm genuinely surprised when he misses big shots at the end of the game. The Suns, he missed a couple of free throws. I was surprised he missed a wide open corner three at the end of the game. I get surprised when he misses those because I feel like he likes those moments.
Yeah, definitely. And tracing back to his AAU days when he was playing with the Atlanta Celtics, that was also his responsibility. You know, he was a top five player in the country, five-star McDonald's All-American. So whenever it was those close moments, they knew who the ball was going to. And I think that's something that he's carried with him into the NBA of, I know at my height, my size, I can get this shot off against whoever. And especially in those clutch moments, like you said, I think he wants to take those shots. That's so invaluable. It's one thing to think you can make it. It's one thing to know you can make it. And I think he has that's such a self-belief in himself in those moments. And I think that goes back to a work ethic. I don't think you believe in yourself to make those shots unless you're working on those shots tirelessly when nobody's watching. So I completely agree. We've seen it before. I agree with you, too. I'm expecting out of an ATO that the play is going to be called for Jabari in the last minute because they know the type of mismatch he is, and they know that he wants to take that shot.
The other thing is, I mean, me and her were talking about the Giannis comparison, and we're talking about work ethic. And I've heard KD comparisons. He doesn't have the body of a Giannis or a KD in that he's not the athlete. They are 6'2 athletes and 7 foot bodies. And that's not Jabari, but he's no slouch either. And that's why I compared him more to LaMarcus, but LaMarcus was a worse athlete at that size. And, you know, hopefully, you know, the key to me is just, you know, that shooting's just got to keep inching up. And then maybe he adds some other skills that we're not expecting with him. I want to hear from everybody that's out there watching and listening. What do you guys think? Get in the comments. Also, DeAndre, in my last show, I asked Red Nation Hoops, Salman Ali, if Rafael Stone should be fired in a couple of months. And we kind of differed on that in some things. I'm going to post the link on the screen at the end of this video, my conversation with Salman. But do you have a strong feeling either way, DeAndre, whether Stone should be back next year?
I think this last 22 games is going to heavily determine it. I don't think he's done himself any favors. I think when you come out and declare this is phase two and that we're moving forward, I think ending the year still having to go to the lottery with your own pick, that from the owner's perspective doesn't look great. I don't think Tillman's up there saying, well, this is what we wanted phase two to be. You know, Tillman fleshed out a lot of money this summer. They went over the first luxury tax, which is something I always questioned with Tillman when the new CBA was dropped, was how much of this is he going to be willing to spend? Is he going to be willing to dip his toe into that first and second apron? And he did. He fleshed out a max contract for a guy who had only made one all-star team. He went out and overpaid Dylan Brooks, went out and overpaid a Jock Landale, overpaid a Jeff Green. So I think from Tillman's perspective, he's looking like, I paid this much money, I went over the apron, and we're still three seeds better than what we were. I think he's looking at it a bit iffy from an owner's perspective. I do think he'll probably have one more season, though. I think they'll give him one more season. I think the Steven Adams move was built for that of, hey, we might not get it this year, but we have a guy next year who we think is going to be able to patch up some of the holes we have. We have $16 million roughly in cap space, a lot of tradable contracts in Jeff Green, Jayshon Tate, the Jock Landale deal, which is non-guaranteed, which was a brilliant move by him. The Ricky extensions are coming up. I'm interested to see how he deals with that. So I think he's bought himself another summer, but I think that summer is going to be make or break for him. I think depending on the moves and depending on how the team looks going into the All-Star break next year, that'll be the final note on Rafael Stone's tenure as a Rocket one way or another.
Yeah, and one of the things that I didn't get a chance to get into with Salman, and I just disagreed with him on, is he talked about the fact that, you know, who out there is much better that you're going to be able to get? Or, you know, he just didn't have, Salman was like, well, he didn't have the confidence that, hey, you can go get somebody better. Because my point was, at best, he looks like a mediocre GM. He doesn't look like a guy that's going to go out and put together a championship team. I mean, sometimes you can luck into these things, but you typically want the guy that can go out and get a championship. And he's like, well, you know, it's not like you're going to go out and get a Sam Presti. Why not? Why can't you get a Sam Presti? You know, why can't you get, you know, somebody that is from the Miami organization might bring some of what they're doing there? You know, because you win this at the edges. And my biggest concern with him is I don't think he knows how to win at the edges. I don't think he does a lot of the little moves that need to be done to make you better. And, you know, when I look at the back of this roster, that's a big deal. You know, I still heard him talking about, you know, Boban being a great move. If you like Boban around, make him a part of the coaching staff. No one was going to go out and sign Boban to be a part of their team, most likely. You know, if you want to bring in some of these other guys at the back of the roster, you know, get some guys that are just a little bit better that you can at least feel like you can put out on the court more than they've been able to put out some of these other guys on the back of the court. I mean, you know, whether it's Nate Williams or, you know, Nate Hinton or whatever, if you don't have guys that you feel like, oh, we can take that chance on, you know, because DeAndre, you've seen what's happened in Memphis. You know, they've found a couple of guys this year. I mean, Gigi Jackson in the second round, but obviously that's a draft pick, but you know, is it Vince Williams? I think he's been a surprise for them. Yeah. Just a totally undrafted guy that they able, you know, with everything that happened, he came in and oh my God, that's something you just don't see from Stone.
Yeah, even regarding Memphis, even a guy they just released in Jacob Gilliard. He's 5'8" and was giving them productive minutes as starting point guard with Giles. So that's definitely some of the concerns I have with him. I'm a big guy in how valuable second round picks are. And I feel like he's been a little too willy-nilly with throwing out second round picks in certain deals. The Steven Adams deal for me, after seeing what other teams got for 2 to 3 second round picks, just kind of concerned me. We knew we needed a backup center this year. Bismack Biyombo was right there. We didn't go get him. But the Thunder just signed Mike Muscala after he was released. That's another guy who would have been able to stretch the floor and give you some quality minutes at backup center. I know
it's real hard though to get those guys if you're
Rockets are. Yeah. As a middling play-in team, I do get that part of it. But there were other moves he could have made. I believe we started the year having 6 second round picks at our disposal, 5 in this draft class, and I think we're down to 2. And all we have to say for it is Steven Adams, a guy that might be a trade filler guy in the summer, a guy that might not even play for us at all. So that's some of the issues I have with him. I do agree with rounding out the roster. I think that's That's a huge thing for a GM. The point of a rebuild to me is finding out if you have your guy. I'm not necessarily completely sold that we have our guy. I think that we have enough assets to maybe go and get one if we're lucky in a trade. But I don't think we have our guy. When you don't have your guy per se, you got to be able to round the roster out with quality veterans, quality role players, guys who fit the team. We still don't have a movement shooter, a real movement shooter. Like we discussed all year long as Rockets fans about Jock Landale and the lack of a backup five and having to play Jeff Green in those minutes. So it's a lot of issues with this roster that you could see coming that he didn't address and didn't and chose not to address at the trade deadline as well. And then going back to the offseason, the Brook Lopez deal falling through and Jock Landale being your backup plan. If Jock Landale was your backup plan for Brook Lopez not being available, I think that says a lot about the plan that you did have as a GM during the offseason. So I'm not fully sold on Stone yet. I do think he's bought himself another summer, like I said, but I do agree with you. I think that there's a guy out there that's looking at this Houston Rockets team, the assets that we have, and is saying, I could build something with that, and I could build something a lot better than what Rafael Stone has built.
Yeah, and my concern just of giving him that extra year is this is around the time where you need to be getting rid of those Brooklyn picks and use them to get something, and I'm scared of Stone having that responsibility, and I'm scared of him having another responsibility of a big offseason after we saw what happened with the Lopez thing. The Landale thing, it may not look bad if you are able to make a trade using that contract that you might not have been able to make otherwise. Same with Jeff Green. You know, some of those contracts were set up to trade, and I get it.
Yeah, most
definitely. But you know, it just scares me because of some of the other stuff. And, you know, I've kind of already expressed a little bit of that. But before we go, just remind everybody how to find you and all your content.
So I'm mostly on Twitter right now. I am starting my YouTube channel up soon, but at Twitter or on Twitter or X now, I guess I should say, at Willems, W-I-L-L-L-U-M-Z. That's where I'm mostly at now. I do have my editing page on Instagram at DeAndre Does, but I'm mostly on X now. Just I'm trying to push out content, but I am trying to move over to YouTube now. A lot of people have been asking me to do it. I was super against it at first, but enough people asking, I guess you got to take the hint, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And everybody loves hearing about your opinions and what you think about what's going on. Some great threads if people go on his X page about, you know, what some of these guys are doing right now and where they're at, like we talked about with Jabari. Thanks so much for doing this, man.
Thanks for having me. I watch the show all the time. Love when we get to talk in spaces. So I'm honored to be here. Thank you, man.
You're listening to Houston Sports Talk.
Hey, don't forget to support us by subscribing and commenting on YouTube. You can always listen to us on Spotify, Apple, or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about us and share our show links on social media. Spread the word, everybody. Thanks for listening.